Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, July 19th. Very warm here in North Texas. It's 105. It's going to be over 100, I think, for about a week. So we're in the middle of what they call heat advisory week. So if you're coming to Dallas, if you're going to be in North Texas anytime in the next week, I would suggest bring a swimsuit. Bring a swimsuit because you're going to need it. You're going to have to go into a swimming pool probably at the hotel or wherever you may be staying, or just go to one of the public pools and refresh yourself for a while. Today we're going to talk about President Obama in South Africa delivered a very interesting speech, and I've got some thoughts on that. Change in Cuba. Is there really change in Cuba? I have a post about this over at the American Thinker. I don't think so, but let's get into it. And there's a very interesting post that I read over at Pan Am Post. This is a wonderful website that features Latin American stories, and every day they have one or two articles, and if you get on their distribution list, you know, they email them to you. Absolutely great material out of Pan Am Post. And today they have one about López Obrador and President Trump. Interesting, promising post about these two men. So we'll touch on that in a minute, though. I want to begin with the Democrats and ICE. You know, for a few weeks, the Democrats have been playing politics with ICE. They want to abolish ICE. They want to change ICE. They want to redo ICE, whatever the term. So, you know, Speaker Ryan said, okay, guys, if you want to abolish ICE, let's put it up to a vote and, you know, vote up and down. So they had a vote yesterday, and it was like 100 Democrats voted present. Something like 134 Democrats voted present. They didn't want to vote no. They didn't want to vote yes. So they vote present, which is really, that's about as silly as it gets. Look, I understand the Republicans were playing politics here, playing politics in the sense that they wanted to force the Democrats to take a vote. But it was the Democrats who started this. It was the Democrats who started talking about abolishing ICE. It wasn't the Republicans. And they were going on television saying, let's abolish ICE, let's abolish ICE. And then, of course, when it came down to really doing something about it, something like 134, something like that, that's pretty close to, I'm guessing that's about 80% of their caucus in the House, because I think there are about 190 or something like that Democrats. That's a pretty big number of Democrats who decided to vote present, as if to say, yeah, we're here, but we don't really know how to vote. And I think it's a shameful thing. You know, it just shows you what a lack of seriousness sometimes there is in Washington. And if you're an American watching this, you know, people don't get to vote present. You know, when they go to meetings, you know, you don't get to vote present when you have to pay your debts. You don't get to vote present when you have to pay your mortgage. You have to either pay it or not pay it. And I just think that, you know, this is not good for the image of the Democrats, not good for the image, frankly, of the country, which is more important than the image of a political party. So I hope that the Hispanic activists are watching this, because I think, once again, they've seen the Democrat Party pander to them. But when it comes time to vote, they don't vote. They didn't do it on immigration when they had majorities with President Obama. They didn't do it on DACA when they had majorities with President Obama. And here they were given the opportunity to abolish ICE, or at least vote on it. I don't think it would have ever passed. But anyway, they were given the opportunity, and most of them decided to vote present. I think that's I think that's pretty silly, frankly, when you think about it. You know, we send these people to Washington to vote, to take positions. We don't send them up there to vote present in a particularly an issue that they started. They're the ones who got this thing going. This was not started by the Republicans. This was started by the Democrats. They're the ones who got this going. And then they decide to vote present. I think that's pretty pathetic, if you tell me. Well, President Obama was in South Africa. Now, he was there for some kind of a Nelson Mandela anniversary. I'm not sure if it was an anniversary of his, you know, of his birthday, or whether it was an anniversary of his death, or an I don't know what the date was about, but it was about the anniversary had something to do with Nelson Mandela. So he went there, and that part I understand. I mean, Nelson Mandela is a controversial fellow, and I don't want to get into that right now. But so I can understand why President Obama would go to a Nelson Mandela ceremony. That's perfectly, you know, expected from President Obama. After all, President Obama went to the funeral a few years ago. Anyway, so he starts giving a speech. I would have expected the speech to be kind of vanilla about race relations or maybe social justice and that kind of thing. No, he goes off. First of all, he starts talking about human rights, and he starts talking about threats to democracy. He starts talking about strong men. And the irony of all of this to me and many others who were watching is that he chose South Africa to give that speech. South Africa is a country right now in a deep crisis. This is a country, of course, that 30 or 40 years ago, maybe longer than that, had apartheid, which is, you know, wrong, and they've corrected that. But over the last 10 to 20 years, the country's falling apart because the politicians have decided to adopt socialist policies instead of promoting the economy, instead of promoting economic growth. They got into the usual socialist politics of distribution and so on. And now, of course, there's potential clashes between the white farmers and the government. And there is even talk of taking their land away because, you know, the land should be distributed to other people. And all of this is creating a lot of racial tension in South Africa and creating some very bad feelings that probably could end up. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to end up in violence, but it probably will end up in violence. In fact, there have been several stories about this. On top of that, South Africa has a terrible record on human rights general, a terrible record on how women are treated. The violence against women is rampant. So this is the country that President Obama chooses to go to deliver a speech about human rights, to deliver a speech about, you know, the strong men who are doubling down on their lies and so on. Obviously, he was talking about President Trump when he gave that speech. And it just seems to me that it was just very bad. It was really. He also talked about universal income and stuff like that, which again, I'm not sure why he did it at this event. Bottom line is that I think it was very unfortunate that he did this in South Africa again because of the human rights violations that I just talked about. And I can guarantee you one thing about the speech that President Obama gave. I don't think there's going to be a single Democrat in a competitive election this year who's going to be talking about that speech, who is going to be running ads in his district or his state or her district promoting that speech. I think this is going to be a speech that will be largely forgotten. But still, for many of us, it's hard to believe that President Obama would pick South Africa as the place to talk about human rights and government abuses, because there's plenty of them in South Africa. That simply is a fact. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes, and then we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we've got a link to all of that on the show information right under show description. You'll be able to check where Carlos is playing. You know, we're great friends. Carlos is a great friend of our show, and he's just a wonderful human being. So I'm glad to see that he's enjoying a lot of success playing around town. Well, I have a post over at the American Thinker today about change in Cuba. The Cuban government has been announcing some changes. And, you know, it's so easy to say change, particularly when you're not changing anything. Basically, what they're doing is that Cuba, they're moving more to the direction where Cubans are going to have private property or be able to own things, although it's all going to be very restricted. It's all going to be very restricted because, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago in another post at American Thinker, the Cuban government is scared to death of Cubans who become successful. It's amazing. The minute you become successful, they try to tear you up because they don't want people to see that capitalism works because they still believe in socialism. And in fact, it is a one-party state, the Communist Party state. And the changes that they're making will apparently make it easier for Cubans to have private property, but at the same time, they're very restricted, and the government has all the powers in the society. It's still a communist country when it's all said and done. It's a communist country. And, of course, the problem that Cuba has is that I know why they're preaching the communist song, and that's because the leadership is communist, and most of the people in the leadership do not want to lose all the benefits that they have. I mean, look, Cuba has been very good for the Castro family, or the Cuban Communist Party has been very good for the Castro family and an elite group of people around them who have actually lived very well. They basically have lived the life of very well-to-do people, all at the expense of the Cuban people. The deals that the Cuban government has made with hotel companies and other foreign companies, these are deals that are beneficial, well, to the investor, of course, but they're very beneficial to the Castro family as well as the Communist Party elite. So they don't want to lose that. They know that the minute you open up the Cuban economy, well, that's going to go out the window. So, but eventually they're going to have to break this up because this change that they're making is not going to create prosperity in Cuba. There's simply not enough there for a foreign company to invest in Cuba. Why would you invest in a country when you have no control over what happens to your country because the federal or the central government has all the control? So eventually they're going to have to scrap all of this and implement capitalism, but it's probably going to take a little bit of time, and probably after Raul Castro dies, I think it may happen. But for the time being, there is no change in Cuba. It's just the old band with a new song or a new vocalist, but not much more. Not much more than that. You know, this morning I saw an article over at Pan Am Post. This is a great website, by the way. Pan Am Post, this is a website you ought to be subscribing to. You get daily notifications of articles that they print. Just an absolutely great website. And they have an article by a gentleman named David Unsworth. And he's talking about Mexico and the United States. He's talking about the incoming López Obrador administration and, of course, the current Trump administration. And, you know, conventional wisdom would say that these two men cannot get along because López Obrador is from the left and Donald Trump is not necessarily from the right, but he clearly has a tough position on the border and immigration and so on. But it's starting to look a little bit like these two men are talking. And as this article this morning in Pan Am Post was suggesting, there are really a lot of mutual interest here. Mexico needs jobs. Mexico needs economic stability. And Mexico needs, because the economic stability is paramount to the political stability. So Mexico is also not crazy about becoming a highway, if you will, for illegal immigrants from Central America to the United States, because that's a real problem for them. On the other hand, you know, we're having our own little problem here where the economy is growing so fast and companies, you know, some companies cannot find people. So David, in his article, is suggesting that maybe we should kind of look at an economic alliance where maybe we make it possible or we legalize Mexicans who want to work in the United States. I think it makes a lot of sense to me. You know, we had something like this called the Bracero program 40 or 50 years ago, but that was primarily related to agriculture and so on. But this would be a little bit broader than that, and I think it would be good for the United States. I mean, look, if a company cannot find an American who can work because he has, you know, there's too many jobs and not enough employees, I don't have a problem with bringing in somebody from the outside. So there may be the basis here. There may be the basis here for a good relationship between the United States and Mexico, despite the fact that we all thought that it wasn't going to be that way. It may very well be that way, that the man from the left and the man from the right may be able to get together, and there are still mutual interests. As I say, the economy is one of them. So check the article. I'm going to try to get David on one of our shows and just, you know, talk a little bit more about this, because I think he's onto something. He's onto something in that article about some of these mutual economic interests that Mexico and the United States has. Let me take a minute here and say happy number 71 to Vicky Carr. She was, of course, born here in Texas, and we who like music have followed her for years. She's got a great voice. She's got great style. Vicky Carr, who was born in El Paso, Texas, 1941? I think that's what it is. Yeah, so she's 77, if you can believe that. Happy birthday, Vicky Carr. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Talk to you later. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.